The first reading is from Haggai chapter 1. It's entitled, A Call to Build the House of the Lord. In the second year of King Darius, on the first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest. This is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say the time has not yet come to build the Lord's house. Then the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. Is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while this house remains a ruin? Now this is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but harvested little. You eat, but never have enough. You drink, but never have you fill. You put on clothes, but are not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. Go up into the mountain and bring down timber and build my house so that I may take pleasure in it and be honored, says the Lord. You expect much, but see, it turned out to be built. What you brought home, I blew away. Why? Declares the Lord Almighty. Because my house remains a ruin, while each of you is busy with your own house. Therefore, because of you, the heavens withheld their dew, and the earth its crops. I called for a drought on the fields and the mountains, on the grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and everything else the ground produces, on people and livestock, and all the labor of your hands. Then Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the whole remnant of the people obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the message of prophet Haggai, because the Lord their God sent him. And the people feared the Lord. Then Haggai, the Lord's messenger, gave this message to the Lord of the people. I am with you, declares the Lord. So the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of the whole remnant of the people. They came and began to work on the house of the Lord Almighty their God. On the 24th day of the sixth month, in the second year of Darius. The second reading is from the book of John, chapter 4, verses 21 to 24. Woman, Jesus replied, Believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You, Samaritans, worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in the spirit and in truth. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I joked with the choir earlier that one of the things in Malawi, one time I went to preach and I asked the minister, how long should I preach? How long should the service be? And she said, Abusa, which means minister. We don't hurry God in Malawi, which was her way of saying, hey, we've got a couple hours, don't stress. I'll hurry because you all are North Americans and we... The joke is that God gave Africans all the time and the Azungu, the white folks, all the watches. So we'll be watching our watch. I first need to start off by saying thanks, and not just for inviting me, but in general, thanks for supporting the work that the Presbyterian Church in Canada is doing, not just in Malawi, but in other places. I'm most particularly thankful for your support for Malawi. And some of you are thinking, do we give this guy money? What's the story? Every time that you make a contribution to Presbyterian Sharing, you are contributing to the budget that goes to pay for my salary that sends me to Malawi in April and September and keeps me in health and home. And so as long as you've made your contribution to Presbyterian Sharing, and I think that St. Stephen's generally does, you have, without knowing it, made a contribution to the ministry that I am part of. And so in some ways, I am your minister. Just as you pay Meg, you pay me, and I go and minister on your behalf in another place. And so thank you for that. Sometimes there's a little bit of confusion. We'll go into this a little bit later. There are kind of two parts to the Presbyterian Church that does work overseas. One part is the Presbyterian Sharing part, and I'm part of International Ministries, and we tend to send people. So my colleague Joel Sherboneau, who's the minister in Paris, Ontario, he also comes to Malawi, and he works with a group of lay people who visit in prisons. We visit almost 20 different prisons in southern Malawi at the moment. So we send people for that. The other side is Presbyterian World Service and Development. Many of you will be familiar with PWS&D. And in the name, it says it. They do two things. They do relief and they do development work. And so relief work in Malawi would be, we've had a number of cyclones in the last number of years. And so it floods, in part because of deforestation. And so the earth is very clay-based. And so when you have deforestation and you have a clay-based, flooding becomes worse because there's no way for the rain to get absorbed into the earth. And so Presbyterian World Service and Development coordinates with a local partner, and in this case, it's Churches, Action, Relief, Development, so many acronyms, I'm sorry, but which is CARD. And CARD coordinates our response. And it's not just the Presbyterian World Service and Development that does it. There's all kinds of other churches that make a pool of money, and then they give it to the local partner, and the local partner does relief. And my wife, Vivian, was involved working with CARD. But they also, Presbyterian World Service and Development, also does what is more traditional development. So in Malawi, again, Presbyterian World Service had a maternal child health program. There's the church runs a number of hospitals, and so in coordination with the Canadian government and the Canadian Food Grains Bank, Presbyterian World Service and Development did a multi-million-dollar, multi-year project to try to increase the maternal health and child welfare in two hospitals that we've had a relationship with over the long term. And those hospitals serve anybody. It's not just Presbyterians. There's, you know, one doctor for over 250,000 people. And so this program was really to try to get economic benefits into the hands of families, and mothers, but also children. And as we go in, as I'll talk about a little bit, there is really in Malawi no such thing as an orphan, because if for us, the nuclear family is often what we think about. So it's a mother and a child, a mother and a husband, or a man and two children, three children, whatever. In Malawi, family is a much bigger idea. There is no word for cousin, for instance, in Chichewa. There's just brother from this one, and so, or sister from this one. And so you'll ask, I greeted you with Chitsulo's name. So in Chitsulo's family, he has three biological children, and then he has three children that he's adopted from his family, from a sibling who died and different people, and they're in his family. And he counts them as his children. He pays for their school fees. He does everything. So there's really no orphan. So what our program, Presbyterian World Service and Development, was doing was trying to equip that extended family for people, for children who didn't have mothers anymore. So we were buying goats and doing different interventions in order to try to help extended families who then had much bigger families because they were adopting these children. So that's perhaps more details, but what I wanted to say is just that there are these two parts to the church. International Ministries, which sends people, such as myself and Joel, and Presbyterian World Service and Development, which does relief and development projects. Both have benefit, as we'll see, and both have good things, and you support both of them. But I stand on this side, and this is my people are the International Ministries people. So you can ask me about Presbyterian World Service and Development and what they're doing in Malawi, but that's not what I do. What I do is I work at a university. When Rob introduced me, he said Zamba Theological College, and until recently it was a college. But we've just gained university status, and so that's not really going to change the width of our programming, so we're not going to offer nursing or education or anything else. We still are going to be a theological school, but it means that we're now teaching a master's class, and we're about to offer a doctoral class. And our master's class is in contextual theology. It's the only one in the country. There are about 21 million people in Malawi. About a third of them are Presbyterian. So just get your head around that for a moment, okay? So let's be conservative and say that there's 5 million Presbyterians, okay? That's, 25 times at least as more Presbyterians in Malawi than there are in Canada. There are likely more Presbyterians in Malawi than there are in North America, the U.S. and Canada combined. And so our school is the only school that services all of the Presbyterian church. And so traditionally, the vast majority of ministers have come through our school. But because we're now a university, we're doing training programs for more than just that. About 50% of our students are training to be ministers, and about 50% are going to be elders or lay leaders or something like that. But our program in contextual theology is the only one in the whole country for all of those Christians to study theology that uses their indigenous language and that encourages them to study African theology. So imagine if you're an African studying to be a minister and all of your readings are written by British or North American people. How does that work? We already know that they're very different places and worlds. And that's what it's been up until recently. And so our school, with our help, with your help, is transitioning to make sure that we are able to lift up the voices of African theologians and to be able to do that kind of work. So that's what I do, mostly, and I'm on the international ministry side. So all of that is to say thank you for supporting what I'm doing on your behalf in Malawi. I'd like to play a little video, because I really would wish all of you could make that 36-hour journey with me. I'm going on March 28th, if anybody's available. Once you get there, it's relatively cheap, and I'm sure I could find you a place to sleep. Maybe might not be exactly what you're used to, but I could find a place for you to sleep. So in lieu of all of us going to Malawi, the second best, or maybe the third best thing, is to have Malawi come here. And so we're going to watch a video. And this is a church choir. So just like y'all, this is their equivalent of a church choir. And in order to do fundraising and to get the word out that they're an exciting church to go to, it's quite common to make these videos that you're going to see. This one happens to be a bit slicker than some, which is good, this is a relatively common thing. If there's any NCAA basketball fans here, March Madness, big tournaments, whatever, in Malawi, they don't have that, but they do have, it's kind of like a March Madness for choirs, and so they have regionals, and then you go from regionals to all the way to the championship. And so it's a big deal. lots of people. And so this, yep.
I've been to Malawi.
Okay, great. Yeah, great. Yeah. All right. Can we hit that video? Perfect.
Let's go.
if you'd like to shoot a video, I know a guy. All right. If you need that, I could spend a long time talking about this video, but I think it is pretty representative of a lot of Malawian life. It is a largely rural society. So this church is actually a suburban church that has gone just a little bit farther out into this village to shoot this video. It's, on some metrics, the fourth poorest country in the world, others the 10th poorest, but I think at this point, when we're in the bottom 10, you're splitting hairs, right? This is an extremely poor economic country, and so you see that, I think, in this video. There may be other things that surprise you, and I'd love to be able to talk about it, but I just want to highlight three things this morning in light of our scripture as we go along. Meg said that you've been doing some kind of theme about worship, and so I've been thinking about worship or praise and these sorts of things. And I think when you watch a video like that, I hope that you get some sense in which there's a lot of joy that is there. Malawi is called the warm heart of Africa. I don't know if you get that impression, but from the smiles and the laughter and just the interactions, and even from the music itself, it's kind of joyful music, right? And when people come to Malawi, their first worship experience in Malawi is often a bit overwhelming, especially if they come from North America. And there's nothing wrong with what we do, it's just it's different than what you're going to experience there. And most commonly, what somebody will end up saying is, I just can't understand how they're so joyful and they have so little. There's something about that. And I think that what it likely says is more about us than about Malawians. In the sense that I wonder just how much we confuse comfort with joy. In that Haggai passage, one of the problems in that passage was that the people were building their houses, they were clothed, they were doing all these things. They were, in other words, comfortable. Yet somehow there wasn't the joy of worship that was present that Haggai and God expected. Now, I earlier talked about Presbyterian World Service and Development and that Malawi is an economically poor country. And, you know, maternal health rates are low, meaning, you know, child mortality rates are high. At one point, almost 20% of the population was infected with HIV/AIDS. This is not a paradise on earth. But for us to think that by raising the development level of Malawians is going to somehow increase their joy or their happiness is to participate in our own ways that we think about joy and happiness. Because for them, they have nothing and they're more joyful than we are, by and large. Because people notice this. It's not just me. Like, when people come to Malawi, they're like, I can't understand this. This is different from my normal experience. And so I don't have an answer for that, but I do have a challenge, which is for us to at least think about what is the relationship between comfort and joy. And if somebody is not comfortable, is not economically advantaged, and has joy, and I am economically advantaged, but I don't, what does that say about my understanding of joy and how we as a church might participate in that? I think it's a challenge for us. It's a challenge for me, for sure. And maybe you feel that as a challenge as well. And I think it's a challenge, one of the challenges that Haggai is bringing up, is that we often confuse comfort with joy. And Malawians don't have comfort, but are still joyful. The second thing I wanted to note about it is just that they all had, the choir people, they all had the same clothing, right? Like, if we stood up here, everybody's got something slightly different. Of course, they're all clothed, which is great, but they, you know, it's all slightly different, right? It's a group of individuals who are sitting together. In Malawi, Malawi is something called a collectivist society. And in a collectivist society, the whole is more important than the part. And so it's very important to them that they are participating as a whole in this worship experience. And to make sure that we're all together, they make sure that they all dress alike. Now, there are some very practical reasons why this is helpful. Those who are rich and can afford nice clothes, and those who are poor who cannot, if they all have a uniform, then they're all together. We come together, both poor and rich, before God. And we're not putting on airs or doing those sorts of things. But even on a deeper level, it has to do with saying, these are my people. This is my group of people. My students are very distressed that I don't have a village. They talk about this at lunchtime. They're like, you know, Dr. Blair doesn't have a village. What are we going to do about this? And for what they mean is that in Chichewa, there's a distinction between where you stay and where you live. And I stay in Barrhaven. That's where I stay. But, you know, I don't have any other family in Barrhaven. Before I moved there, I couldn't even really find it. It was Farrhaven. I used to live, you know, downtown. It was Farrhaven, right? It's not my village, people, okay? As much as Barrhaven people, if there's Barrhaven people here, I'm not trying to insult it. I'm just saying it's not my village. My parents live in Elmira, Ontario. I haven't lived there since I left after grade 13. My grandmother and my mother's family are from Maxville. My grandfather was, you know, part of the first Highland Games. You know, you can thank me for those pipes. Thank you. Like, so are those my people, or my father's people are down near Woodstock? Like, they're United Empire loyalists. They came through New Jersey, and they came up. Like, are those my people? Where are my people? Right? This confuses my students, because North Americans, we move around a lot. And so we stay in all these different places. But for a Malawian, they stay in different places, but they live in their village. This is their people. When they die, these are the people that are going to bury them. When they're sick, these are the people that are going to care for them. When they need something, these are the people that are going to be there for them. These are their people. Church planting in Malawi is difficult because you're asking somebody to leave their people. They're like, why would I leave that place? These are my people. But you don't like the church. I know, but they're my people. They don't go around trying, this is my people. So in terms of worship then, it's not as much about a group of individuals coming together, sitting like our choir. It's a gathering of my people. I read an article this week about North Americans, and we are suffering more deaths of despair than we ever have. A death of despair is a suicide or some kind of drug-related death or some kind of alcohol consumption death, an overdose, liver disease, whatever it might be. More deaths of despair. And yeah, there's going to be medicine that can, but the single largest factor in all of that is loneliness and isolation. And of course, COVID has not helped us with this. Something that was already present, that we tend to be individualistic and we tend to be alone, only got worse because of COVID. So I think there may be something there in a Malawian collectivist understanding of finding my people and sticking it out with these people. There is a dark side, just to be clear. It means that there's often an us versus them. In the John passage this morning, it was a Samaritan woman and Jesus, who is a Jew. And the fight was about who has the right place of worship, us or you. And so my people or your people. And so there can be, and Malawi is rife with ethnic tension. And the more famously, just north of Malawi in Rwanda, we have Hutu and Tutsis, right, who are in conflict. That's also a collective society. We stand together versus you. And that can lead to horrible things. So there are warnings there as well. But how can we, in some ways, have this sense of we are coming together as our people and worshiping God? In John, how Jesus moves from this is he's saying, it's neither going to be the Jews, although salvation comes through the Jews, or the Samaritans. It's going to be we are worshiping on another mountain, a third thing, which is ultimately the mountain that we find of God. Mountains often are where God lives. In Jerusalem, the temple, which Haggai is talking about, is on a mountain. Right? So this is, it's not there or there, it's in this temple where God lives that we go to. The third thing is, I think, I'm not trying to hurry God, but the third thing I think that I wanted us to think about here was, you know, the guy, I don't know if you notice, he's waving his plane around. Like, he says, everything that we do, and that's a furniture factory. You just saw a furniture factory. That's where you get your furniture. And he's planing and then using his square to make things. And, you know, they're in the market. They're selling a very basic diet, onions, greens, tomatoes. There were these little dried fish that were in there. Very simple diet, but it was in the market. There was the furniture guy. There's not a lot of things, but everything that they have is infused with God's presence or the possibility of God's presence. In Haggai, part of the issue that is going on in Haggai is he's a prophet that's writing after the Israel has been exiled, and now they've returned. So they got punished by getting sent to Babylon, and now they're back in Jerusalem, and they're trying to figure things out. And God is saying, hey, you've been back now. I brought you back. And what's the first thing that you do? You build your house. But hey, hello, I brought you back. And what am I, chopped liver? Like, you didn't build me a house. Build me the house, because you need to be grateful for what I have done in your life. You need to be reminded that it is not you that did this, it is me that did this. For Malawians, they have a very strong sense that the spiritual penetrates everything that goes on. So if something positive is going on, it's somehow God's action at work. If something bad goes on, it is often something evil that is at work. And so one of the acts of worship is just to thank God for being present to bring goodness. Right? We prayed this, remember, this morning, deliver us from evil. Right? For a Malawian, that's a very concrete reality. For us who live in the secular West, we kind of go, well, evil is, yeah, it's vague. There are bad things. It's true. I wonder whether or not we may have gone a bit too vague about how things go. Because in part, I wonder whether or not we really feel like we've been saved from anything. A Malawian really feels that they have been saved from evil. And because of that, they're joyful. And they worship together. But if I don't feel like I've been saved from anything, or that God has done anything that I couldn't do myself, I wonder when I come to worship whether I'm really as in it as my Malawian brothers and sisters. So there's some challenges, I think, about worship. You know, whether or not I know that I've been saved from. What have I been saved from? And when I come to worship, what am I giving thanks for? How do I find meaning in that? Who are my people? And where is my joy if I don't have comfort? All of these things are, at least for me, having lived there and continue to work there, continue to be something that all of these things are challenging for me. And so I put them out for you to see whether or not they're challenging for you, and whether or not there's a benefit in our brothers and sisters and us having this kind of conversation. So, thank you for listening about Malawi. And my watch was telling me, Azungu. Azungu just means white person or Western person. Azungu, you need to be Azungu, not Abusa. So, telling me I need to keep my time. So, let's pray for a moment. God, we give you thanks this morning for your presence, for saving us, for being drawing us together as your people, and for giving us joy. We come to you in praise. Amen.